Christian wird,
I took refuge in the Buddha. And therefore, it's worth Dharma, who out of his compassion taught us the holy Dharma to rid us of all distorted views. So in this prayer you heard, I mean, reciting, it says, there is nothing greater to listen to than this. So, of course, there are many different sounds or we can listen to the sounds of inanimate objects and also the sounds or the voice of the birds and so forth. And then we have the human voice. And sound of human voice. And so many of them are just neutral, doesn't have much effect on us. So much of our speech actually tend us towards hate, love and hate attitudes. Hearing something has been great or done greatly or something has been done wrongly and so forth. I mean, we are disturbed by emotions. And then when we hear about things which give us pleasure, our attachment grows. So that's this a sound which actually quells the negative emotions, our undisciplined and unruly mind, not merely just the symptoms, but the cause and the root of it, which we must which are taught in detail, in great detail. So this such a teaching, giving such a very clear introduction to these, and not only these causes of the undisciplined mind, but the opposing factors and their counterforces. And so the teaching on these, which is something worthwhile listening. And so we do not want suffering. Of course, animals also do not want that. But we have also this intelligence. And therefore, since human race developed in this world, we have the language also developing. And humans have, of course, caused lots of problems in the world. If we didn't have much language, the vocabulary and so forth, but we may not have caused much problem to ourselves and others. But because of this language as well, which we can use very in different ways, broadly, therefore, we can, of course, have to use it. Of course, we cannot obliterate it, but we must use it. Of course, the language itself is also useful, and therefore we must try to use it for some beneficial purpose. And therefore, the teaching, a spiritual teaching, which actually helps us to overcome our unruly mind, is the teaching of the Buddha. Of course, there were other teachings before the Buddha came into the world. There were other non-Buddhist traditions already existing in India. But the Buddha never said that everyone has to become Buddha. And there's no reason for to say that as well. And each individual has their own, his or her own interest in mental dispositions. And therefore, Vinaya text that I recited and also says that restrain your senses and of the horse of your senses and listen carefully, attentively to the teaching of the Buddha. So what we are dealing with are the negative emotions, saying that the negative emotions have such and such negative consequences. And therefore, we to subdue our negative emotions, we have to listen to the teaching. But ultimately, the basic nature of the mind is luminous and awareness. And therefore, we can use that to eliminate the adventitious negative emotions and all the other defilements from within our mind. So whatever terms we may use, what we are dealing with here is the negative emotions, the kleshas, seeing them as our real enemies and apply the antidotes to them. And so, therefore, the teaching which shows us such a path is worthwhile listening. And then the Buddha says, with his just as the sun illuminates the whole and universe, likewise the words of the son of the Buddha's speech dispels the negative emotions and enlightens us, dispels the darkness within us, and opens our wisdom, intelligence. And because of that, we'll have a happier and happier life. And ultimately, the final happiness or the goal of the ultimate happiness, the Buddhahood, is reached. And so, through miracles, physical miracles, of course, miracles, Buddha could have helped to a certain degree, but not fully. And similarly, his omniscient mind Also, he could help us, but mainly with his speech, the Buddha has been able to help us, and he is able to help us eliminate our own negative emotions and so forth. And over these nearly 2,600 years, many have been led to nirvana and omniscient state of Buddhahood. And many sentient beings have received the teaching of the Buddha within their mind stream and reached and overcame the obscuration to knowledge and reached omniscient state of Buddhahood until now. And today, in the 21st century also, where we have lots high advancement and lots of advancement in material and development, technology and science, but material development alone is not a guarantee to happiness, as we already know from our own experience in the world today. And therefore, because people have this kind of disturbance in their mind and disturbed states of mind, now prayer and faith alone is not enough to overcome it. And therefore, we have to know what are the causes leading to such suffering and misery and problems for people, and how to live on a daily basis also a peaceful, relaxed, and happy life. And we have the teaching of the Buddha. Therefore, his teaching is quite marvelous. As Jerome Butcher says, of all the deeds of the Buddha, his deed of speech, giving teachings, is the utmost, the best. And therefore, through this, we should remember the Buddha. And so all the teachings of the Buddha, of course, is grounded in the understanding of dependent origination. What that means is that things do not have any objective intrinsic existence. And therefore, of all the enlightened deeds of the Buddha, his speech, deed of his speech, is the is principle in helping us. And so we have here today people from all different walks of life and from around the world gathered here in the Pali tradition. Of course, in the Pali tradition, they do not recite the Heart Sutra, whereas in those following the Nalanda tradition, the Sanskrit tradition, we do recite the Heart Sutra. And so we do recite this prayer every day. Do you recite the Heart Sutra before your tea in the morning or after the tea? After tea? Okay. And so we do recite this text, this Heart Sutra. Of course, we do not recite it in Sanskrit, nor Chinese, nor English, but we recited it in Tibetan. And therefore, we have to know the meaning of the Heart Sutra. So, of course, I do not also know the meaning of the complete meaning of the Heart Sutra. So I have read about 10 of the commentaries that are contained in the Tenjur. And then I have also studied different commentaries to Mula Madhyamaka Karika, and mainly we have to study Mula Madhyamaka Karika. And so I usually tell the Chinese, Vietnamese, Koreans, and Japanese, when I give introduction to the Buddhism, I explain the Heart Sutra. At one time, one abbot of Japanese abbot, who is also a great scholar, we became very good friends, close friends. So one day he told me that all of us recite the Heart Sutra, but we do not understand the meaning. Therefore, your explanation of the Heart Sutra has been really helpful and beneficial to me. And therefore, I usually explain the Heart Sutra. At the end of the Heart Sutra, we find mention of this phrase, all the Buddhas of the three times also rely on this perfection of wisdom and become enlightened, fully enlightened, perfect. And so, all the Buddhas who are free from all faults and replete with full of positive qualities have not become so without any causes, but by using their intelligence and this wisdom and mind and progressing and making advancements in it further and further, and therefore realizing emptiness in its full aspect of the highest benefit, they became Buddhas. Of course, there are so many qualities of the Buddhas, but the main quality that we refer to is that all-knowing aspect or omniscience. And so, omniscience means that this mind or wisdom is able to see everything as everything that exists. And that comes about through the progression along the path and increasing your understanding, your knowledge, further and further as you progress along the path. And therefore, the wisdom that realizes emptiness is the main factor that leads us to that omniscient state. And therefore, wisdom is the principal factor that leads us to that goal of Buddhahood. And so, love, compassion, of course, they do counter certain negative emotions like anger, but they do not counter the ignorance, which is the root of all negative emotions, because they are not diametrically opposed to them. And so, the best of the wisdom is the wisdom understanding that all five aggregates are also empty of any inherent nature. So because of our ignorance, which is a misconception of our reality, we are caused suffering. It causes us all suffering. And therefore, to overcome this ignorance, we need to overcome the ignorance. And ignorance is an afflicted intelligence, which is the worst kind of negative state of mind, because it gives us a feeling or notion that which is totally wrong about the reality. And therefore, we need to rely solely on the wisdom of emptiness to counter this ignorance. And so, the Heart Sutra says, all the five aggregates also should be seen as being empty of any inherent nature. So there may be some people who are new to my teaching here. Most of you may have heard. And so, here, with regard to this phrase, so these five aggregates also should be seen as being empty of inherent existence, has this term also. And so this word is not there in the Chinese translation. And because of that, in the translations of Heart Sutra in Korean, Vietnamese, Japanese and Vietnamese also, their translations do not miss this word. And therefore, when I found this difference, I checked with the Sanskrit. And I found that the Sanskrit has this word, and this one single word has great significance. It's very meaningful, because what it refers to is, it's not only that the self, the person, is not only that the person is empty of inherent existence, but also the five aggregates, which are the basis of designation of a person, are empty of intrinsic existence. And therefore, what this shows is both the selflessness of persons and phenomena. So this, because the Heart Sutra is a Mahayana text, therefore, within the Mahayana, we accept both the selflessnesses, And therefore, we have to see not only the self or the person being empty of inherent nature, but the aggregates also being so. And then secondly, this word also has this significance, that during the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha showed the Four Noble Truths, and he showed the process of causation, causation through on the basis of the 12 links of dependent origination. And he shows the process of how we are let into samsara, and he doesn't talk about the person who goes who is propelled into this samsara. And so, why is this so? It's because it is taken for granted that the Buddha had already in mind the idea or this teaching of the selflessness of persons. And so, as it is said in the Sandinimocana Sutra, the Buddha, in the first turning of the wheel, has actually indicated that the five aggregates have some objective existence. And therefore, during the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, while it also talks about the selflessness of persons, it also says that the five aggregates also are empty of intrinsic existence. And so are the five aggregates, which are the basis for establishing emptiness and emptiness, distinctly separate? That is not so. Because the Heart Sutra says, form is empty, emptiness is form. And what it shows is the two truths, are the two truths distinct in nature or separate in nature? No, because then the Heart Sutra also says, emptiness is not other than form, and form too is not other than emptiness. And so, we should not just confine this to form alone, this whole principle. Although it does teach us that form does not have any objective independent existence. In the Madhyamaka Avatara, it says, His Holiness wants to be able to recollect. Through the sevenfold analysis of a chariot, the vase and the other phenomenon and so forth do not cannot be found if searched for those objects through the sevenfold analysis. But they do exist by way of worldly convention. And therefore, things do exist in convention. But if you were to search for that very object within that object itself, if you think closely, analyze, then you will not find it. And therefore, in the Jerembuchi's Lekche Nyingpo and Sashi Tikchen, it says that, and so, and then in the Lakdong Chemo, the great insight section of Lamrim Chemo, Master Tsongkhapa says that although you who have studied the Madhyamaka texts may find it difficult to assert that things, the causation of things do exist, although they do not have any intrinsic existence. You may find it difficult, but it is better to rely on that understanding. Of course, things cannot be found when you search for them. But you cannot deny their existence as such. And therefore, Jetsongkhapa says that you have to direct your mind forcibly towards that. So it's quite difficult to actually see that things are merely in name, that merely designated. And therefore, in Gongpa Rapsel, the commentary to Madhyamaka Avatara, Jai Rinpoche says that this is the difficult part of the Madhyamaka. Of course, as the people who can become enlightened, a Buddha, how is it possible that we cannot understand such things? Because Madhyamaka view is something which we must come to understand through logic. We can use logic and reasoning and then look at things from holistically. And the more you reflect on the teaching of the Madhyamakas, the philosophy of Madhyamakas, we can understand more. And I do not claim to have the realization of emptiness, but I may boast to you that I am about to reach there. And so, we have this phrase, form is empty, emptiness is form. We can apply this to ourselves. I am empty, emptiness is me. And Buddha is empty, emptiness is Buddha. And samsara is empty, emptiness is samsara. And so forth. And so, when you think about, when you think along these lines, what you reflect on is the emptiness, empty nature of these things. And therefore, although things do exist, but and do not have any objective independent existence, therefore, there's no other choice but to say that they are designated. They exist by way of designation. And therefore, we also come across debate on whether there is a commonly accepted basis on object, or not. So, but then what appears to us when we look at things is that they exist as if they have some objective independent existence. But through my own reflections and on the teachings on emptiness, through my own reflection, through reasoning, I can see that although things do not have any existence objectively, but they do exist. And that existence also is by way of designation alone and nothing else. And Master the seventh Dalai Lama also says the same thing. And Wensapa also says that fixing your mind in equipoise or meditative equipoise on emptiness. Within the sphere of emptiness, the space of emptiness, all the formations of the clouds are possible. But when you actually do look for those or search for those clouds, of course, they do vanish within. And so in this way, through the understanding and insight into emptiness, it is possible for us to actually make our grasping a true existence shaky and then finally remove it from within our mind. And therefore, we should think along these lines. And therefore, through this, what we can see is that Buddha is someone a unique teacher. And then we can also see the arahats as being very special and also the true cessation. And so the whole of this teaching of the Buddha, the crux of it is this understanding of emptiness and the cessation. And therefore we can see how great our gurus who give us the teaching to lead to that goal are. And then while we have found this human existence, now you will see that how significant it is. How can I waste this life? Even for a day. Of course, that things are empty of any inherent existence is a nature of things. But this life I will lose at some point of time because of impermanence and death befalling it. And therefore, on a daily basis, we should think about emptiness and use this life. and then think about how we are in the nature of suffering, and think about the faults of samsara and also the origin of suffering, and think and how we are led into samsara through the origin of suffering. So I do not have anything to say to those who find my explanation not making any sense. Then you can do whatever you want. You can think however you want. But if you really want to be active in your thought, make your thoughts active, then you should think along these lines. So this is the meaning of explanation of empty heart sutra. So what is the benefit of thinking about emptiness? As it says in the Heart Sutra, Gate Gate Mantra is mentioned, we have to proceed along the paths of accumulation, preparation, seeing, meditation, and culminating into this path of normal learning. So when you see that what is grasped by the self-grasping, a true existence, and it does not exist. And then you'll see the significance of the enlightenment as well. Otherwise, it would be more or less a wishful thinking. And if you do not really know how to overcome this grasping a true existence and tread along the path to Buddhahood, and then the meditation on cultivation of bodhicitta also will make sense to you, as it is that intention to reach Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Therefore, we have the complete teaching of the Buddha, Nagarjuna, the Madhyamaka text, and also the Abhisamaya Alamkara, and its 21 commentaries. And then also the wisdom text like Mula Madhyamaka Karika and a supplement to it such as the 400 verses and so forth. And so we are very fortunate to have all these classic texts for us to study and reflect on. And so I always, this is always on the tip of my tongues, saying that the Tibetan Buddhist tradition is in the pure lineage of the Nalanda tradition. And so, these are the monastic institutions like this monastery and so forth are the main upholders of this tradition, Nalanda tradition, the mainly. So, these monastic institutions where you have the study of these classic texts through rigorous arguments back and forth and also establishing one's own position and so forth are these centers. Of course, Sakya did have a very, did have this tradition before, but today the monks who study philosophy in the three great monastic institutions are the main custodians and upholders of this very pure tradition of studying the Dharma in great detail, extensive and profoundly. So for the last 600 years or so, you have been keeping this tradition alive. And, of course, you should be able to understand the text by yourself and then be able to teach to others so that you can actually inspire others also to study them. And today we have in the West, people are quite intelligent and therefore they would be able to understand if you are able to explain to them well, and so we preserve and promote this ancient Nalanda tradition. So whether people follow Buddhism or not, but We can actually serve humanity to lead to the right path, on the right path, by using their intelligence and wisdom. And Jiangzi, this prayer assembly or hall for Jiangzi Dazang used to be only a bamboo shed. And then the number of monks also increased, and then the monks' quarters also became more and increased in number, and then you also gained more and more money, got more and more money, and then you have been elaborating this assembly hall. So just as the externally your monastery has progressed, internally, your study and of the Dharma must also increase further and further. Otherwise, it would be a disgrace to the Dharma only to have the external progress. And so I have met Thi Rinpoche and some others. And today we have the abbots and ex-abbots, former abbots of the three seats of learning and Tashi Limpo and others gathered here. You should also discuss amongst yourselves where do we actually miss? What do we miss doing? Some monks whom I met who are living abroad have told me that when they come to their monasteries like this, these days, what unlike in the past, when they used, even during the spare times, when they used to discuss about the teachings, the text that they studied, these days, when during spare time, what they hear from the monks are about movies and other things that had nothing to do with the Dharma and their studies. And this shows that you are getting more distracted to the external distractions. So I cannot do anything about this. What you should do is you have to actually think on the spot, investigate where we are going wrong. What are the loopholes? Previously, we have been very narrow-minded. We have a very narrow kind of perspective. So in a Tsangpa guy had said that in my village, I am the boss. Like, so we should not be carried away by this notion that we have the Dharma, you know, spread everywhere. We must not, get involved too much into the rituals as well. And so, after coming into exile, I've been encouraging monasteries where they did not have any study of philosophy to institute the study of philosophy, including my own personal monastery, Namgyal Monastery. And today, at my request and encouragement, even nuns have engaged in study of philosophy. And today we have quite a number of nuns who are nearly completing their Geshe Ma degree. And so some people have actually questioned me, is Geshe Ma really possible? I told them, yes, why not? If Gelong is possible, why not Geshe Ma also? Gelong Ma is possible. The Bhikshu Ni is possible. That is the ordination given by the Buddha himself. Why not Geshe Ma too? Female Geshes. So after coming into exile, we considered education to be the top priority. So if I say this now, some of you may feel embarrassed. Thi Rinpoche is here. He's from Ladakh. And when I was in Ladakh last time, we had a meal together with Tirumbuche and other Ladakhi authorities, administrative authorities. And then during that time, I told them jokingly that Buddhism is twofold, scriptural teaching and the realization. And these two can be preserved and promoted through study and practice alone. So you have to either be really a great scholar or a great practitioner living as a hermit. And one of the Ladakhi authorities said, in Ladakh, we do not have both. Neither scholars nor real accomplished practitioners. So if we also lack the study of the three collections of teachings, nor if we do not have the practice of the three trainings of morality, concentration and wisdom, but and then doing some ritual and drumming would only be an indication for the sponsors to call on them, come here. So what Master Vasubandhu said, that the Buddha and the enlightened beings have passed away, and then there are people who do not have any understanding of the Dharma teaching, and they actually cause a lot of havoc in the teaching. So this might become real for us. And therefore, although there are many people following the teaching of the Buddha and Nalanda tradition particularly, but if we actually check who are the real people keeping up this tradition, we can actually see the Densasum and these monastic institutions where there are study of the philosophy. As for me, I'm now approaching 80 years of age, and I have done my best to... of course, I am dependently originated, and you also are dependently originated. We are relative to each other. So you cannot just rely on a single person. So we have nearly been in exile for nearly 56 years now, and therefore we need to see what is best. So when are you going to gather for this discussion? Tomorrow, so you will have a meeting. So do the abbots and ex-abbots meet and take their meal together? If you are taking your meal, lunch together, you just start your discussion during the lunch. Not just leave it to the time until you have the meeting. Because sometimes when you come to a meeting, you just follow some formalities. Lots of those formalities are really useless. So I have been attending the World Parliament of Religions many times. And recently, I met some of the people who were convening this meeting. Some Salt Lake City or somewhere, they are going to convene this World Parliament of Religions. And they told me this. His Holiness was asking if some Rinpoche also was there. And I told them, and they told me that I actually told them that in one of the meetings that this meeting, of course, I have been there many times, but it is a sleepy organization. And so since then, they also found some encouragement, inspiration from me. And they have awakened from their, woken up from their sleep. And so they told me they have done lots of discussions, and they have lots of topics to discuss and plans. And so, Jitamila Repa has said, Sometimes I meditate while sleeping, and doing meditation while sleeping has the significance of my sleep turning into this clear light. There is this instruction for clear light in my sleep. And so otherwise, we try to ignore the bad sides of ourselves and not actually disclosing them in our meetings. And then we try to cover them. And at the time when it comes to the point that everything has to be revealed, all of a sudden, then it's not good. So in 1956, I came to India, and I told Nehru that I want to stay in India, and Nehru told me to go back. And then when I reached, on my way back, when I reached Tromo, I met with Tibetan officials as well as Chinese officials, and I told them that we can discuss about the bad side, our own bad sides, bad things about ourselves. Let others talk about the good things about. So this also applies to your meeting here today, the Geluk meeting. So sometimes when people finish their studies, instead of pursuing enlightenment, they pursue dollars. So of course, it's good if you actually keep your monastic vows purely and think of helping others, going out and teaching others is good. Of course, there are many people who look for money. When we talk about renunciation, this determination to be free, it has to come from. Come for that of liberation. So liberation, our monastic vow, are meant for that purpose. And so, 60 years ago, some 55 years ago, I had told some people to teach Lamrim, beginning with the end and Lhagdong Chemo part, the insight part. And so somebody told me that I advised him to do this and then lead people to understand the Dharma through reason. And so here in the monastic institutions today, there are no children or joining from our own exile communities, but we have people from Tibet, and then we also have, right from the beginning, we had people from the Trans-Himalayan regions of India. And with Chembe Sobala is here, and I'm very grateful to him as well for bringing all these number of students into these monastic institutions. And so we have lacked somewhere to actually encourage our own children to pursue our traditional study in monasteries. And so you have these days courses for courses on introduction to Buddhism for lay people as well. We should actually work harder on this. And so the monastic institutions get people from the Trans-Himalayan regions and Nepal and so forth. And I have also encouraged the secular schools to have teaching on Buddhist logic, to also debate, have debate sessions for them. In our monastic institutions here and monasteries. So this would actually encourage and also give some kind of a pride to the school students as well. And many of the students also take great interest in logic and debate. And therefore, the monastic institutions here could also think of educating the public for public, serving the public. Don't have the superstitions that oh, now our monasteries have the boys and girls even coming to our debate courtyards and doing debate. Of course, each time when boys and girls come here, it should not be the case that something goes wrong with the monks. And so, and then we have monk businessmen. This also is an indication something is not right, something is lacking. So from today, please start your discussions. And so that during your actual meeting, where you have more number of people attending, and also teachers of the monasteries, the better ones should also participate in the meeting and do discussions. So in Hasa Chokang, there was one caretaker of the shrine, and then the caretaker came one time and found that somebody had eaten the offering of kapse or on the altar, and then so the caretaker had actually said that even when someone takes away your food, you still remain smiling. Even when the shrine catches fire, you still remain. How come you still remain smiling? So of course the fact that the shrine caught fire was also the mistake of the caretaker himself. So I usually say that even when I have to, when I'm confined to a wheelchair, I will still be able to talk, because that is my job, I usually say to people. And so, I am nearly 80. My life is going to, physical, the body is going to decline and not. And so, when my last days come, you should be able to make sure that you have actually made me contented with whatever you have done. And otherwise, what is the use of making your tenshuk, the long life offering? It would be just a lip service if you don't not actually mend your mistakes. We usually talk about when we make mandala offering for Tenshuk, the long life offering, we say, may you live for tens of thousands of kalpas, aeons. And you know that I will not be able to live tens of thousands of kalpas, and I know this too. And therefore, we need really to be to make sure that we follow things realistically and not deceive ourselves and not just take things for granted, thinking that we have the three jewels to ourselves and so forth. So if I said too much, excuse me, pardon me. Let's switch to Shamar Lamrim. So we, if you have the text with you, you'll find somewhere in parentheses, in brackets, the page number 14. And if you are interested, so if you'd like to do the ritual of bathing or ablution, so I am, in a way, someone you call like someone at the devil's advocate. And so once somebody came from Tibet and and somebody told me, told him that, gave him some teachings, Dharma teachings, and this person actually said, oh, you're always talking about something that doesn't exist. So, of course, emptiness is the most important concept that we have to understand. And that, too, on the basis of understanding the dependent origination, and through this understanding, if we could do the ablution and so these offerings, we should not think that by doing this kind of ablution, we'll be able to purify our negativities. For that, there must be something else also. And so, we must have the all the necessary conditions to be able to do that through the meditation on emptiness and bodhicitta and so forth. So visualize a beautiful meadow before you, adorned with varieties of bright-colored flowers everywhere and surrounded by various precious trees. In the center of it is a beautiful bath chamber made of various precious gems with three-layer golden canopy and cubicle, with four doors. In front of each is bath pool with a floor spread with gold dust and having three steps each of which serve to go in and out of the pool. Each pool is filled with water, wafting with fragrant ingredients and clearly visualizing the bathing chamber. Deities of the merits filled, saying, in this very fragrant bath chamber, and so on, while imagining that all that the deities hang their clothes. So, as you and all sentient beings take scent water and so forth, this reminded me of this one elderly lady who came from Tibet and told me that all of us were are in prison. And so, of course, if all of them are in prison, she would not be with me at that time. And so, I sent it to a pool from the pool with jewel pots and give them bath. Imagine all their defilements as they appear to the unenlightened beings, as cleansed and engender in them extraordinary primordial wisdom of bliss and emptiness. So any relevant verses while doing so. Also while saying, with the fragrant towels I wipe their body, dry their body, saying everywhere in the trichilocosm offer fragrant ointments, and saying this thin, soft, and light, and so forth, and victorious ones, major and minor monks, imagine offering the three religious robes of monastics to the Nirmanakayas and upper and lower garments and jewel ornaments to the Sambhogakayas, the tiger skin skirt and bone ornaments to the wrathful deities, while saying, for me and other sentient beings, imagine the merit-filled sitting in their individual thrones while the bath chamber disappears. When you are in a hurry, you can do it without bath. So then next is seven limb practice encompassing the essence of collection of merit and wisdom and purification of negativities. And so with regard to prostration, you can actually imagine yourself, your body multiplying. And in the commentary to the confession of the 35 Buddhas, Jezabche has said that even by saying, uttering the names of each of these Buddhas, 35 Buddhas, it actually has the significance and the power to purify negativities that we have collected over tens of eons and so forth. And therefore, doing prostration while reciting this confession of the 35 Buddhas, and it would be really beneficial. First, you should have generate a bodhicitta, have a very clear idea of feeling of bodhicitta, and then imagine the Buddha filled and the rays of light emitting from their heart. So with these factors of visualizing the deities and the light coming and also imagining or generating bodhicitta, it would be really helpful. So suppose you are alone and actually make prostrations first, recite. Recite thrice the mantra for multiplying 1,000 times the merit of prostrations and say the East Lines embodiments of the Buddhas, the eye to see all the vast excellent scriptures, the essence of compassion and kindness, and also the prayer beginning with all the numerous, and also I praise and so forth. While saying these verses, prostrate any number of times as appropriate and proper manner, and prostrate to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions and 3 times who are present in the merit field, and all to all the representations of the body, speech, and mind. And so you should have this faith there, which is admiration, and then confidence, faith with confidence, and also the faith where you also wish to reach those states. And imagine singing qualities of the secret inconceivable body, speech, and mind in your melodious voice. Think and recollect the excellent qualities of objects of refuge, how they developed their altruistic heart in the beginning, how they gathered merit and wisdom while on their path of training, and how they have attained the inconceivable qualities of the body, speech, and mind together with the enlightened deeds, and they be enthused with joyful heart. And by cultivating these faiths, three kinds of faith, single-pointedly do mental prostration and reckon that all sentient beings surrounding you have likewise prostrated to the objects of refuge with their three doors. In the Sattvasthivada text quoted in Compendium of Practices, it says, when you prostrate to the stupas, the containing hairs and nails of the enlightened ones, whatever areas of earth your body cover beneath, from the surface down to the golden base of the universe, measuring depth of 84,000 yojanas, it is said that you will enjoy ruling 1,000 times over the kingdom of Chakravarti and Universal Monarch, equal to the number of sand particles covering that distance. So reflect on such benefits and feel joy. And if your imagination can cope with it, then imagine that all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas together with the spontaneous fulfilled pure realms, realms are present within the space of a single atom, that such atoms fill the entire space. You manifest an equal number of bodies before them and make prostrations with three bodies. So with regard to offering, making offering, the best is your own practice. So even if you may have to put effort, do it deliberately, you should study. As Master Tsongkhapa's praise in the Garden Lhajama says, you have, in this degenerate age, you have given up the 8 worldly mundane concerns, but And so, if you really sincerely believe in Master Tsongkhapa's qualities, then you also should admire and have the determination to train yourself in his footsteps. And then whatever practices you do on that basis, you should dedicate them transforming them, visualize these merits, transforming into the offering materials, and then make your offerings. It's not just a lip service that you are saying you are making all these offerings to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. It's and you are not empty-handed also. You have at least something to offer to them. So as we read in the sixth session Guru Yoga, I will give away without any sense of loss all the my body, resources, and all the virtues, roots of virtues, to all the sentient beings in the three times. When making offerings, say sublime flowers in the clouds of offerings, mantra, and think of actually arranged offerings you already have on the altar, and also imagine the seven kinds of offerings mentioned in the prayer of Samantabhadra: flowers, symbols, ointments, supreme parasol, lamp, incense, and cloths. The cloths, the usual offerings which are mentally imagined and which fill the entire space, the two kinds of water, enjoyments and materials, music, the five sense objects, the seven royal emblems, and so on, as mentioned in the engaging in Bodhisattva deeds, jewel mountains, hills, flowers, forests, evergreen trees, clean rivers, a harvest, lotus lakes, sunlight, moonlight, and so on, all the necessary materials in the universe which have no ownership. By visualizing and offering these things to the objects of refuge, imagine that they have accepted them, and thereby special, pure, blissful experiences are produced in their mind stream. In the center of the thousand petal lotus, you Samantabhadra, the thousand Samantabhadra surrounding you, and the thousand petals are your emanations, and each of the Samantabhadras are holding a precious gem between their folders, folded hands, and so the negative karmas are also negative karmas of body, speech, and mind, and mainly they are motivated by our mind. And so even in dreams, we tend to create negative karmas. So this is about confession. The next part. The negative karmas and moral... moral downfalls I've committed and accumulated since time without beginning, like great emperor's treasury, and considering them one by one, even a single negative karma, like severing life, for example, it's almost like I have only committed this vice since time immemorial, and there are many such instances. Also, in this life alone, I have taken a great many vows, such as the three vows, while keeping not a single one of them in my mind. Therefore, if I cease... if I ceased breathing without purifying these negatives, I'm sure I have no alternative but to go to hell. Had I died yesterday, I would now be crying in anguish and groaning amid red blazing flame of seething fire of an iron house of hell, and I would be helpless. But the fact that I'm still alive is certainly thanks to the three jewels. So today, with strong regret before my infallible refuges, I acknowledge and confess all the vices, the 10 non-virtuous actions which are naturally reprehensible, and wrongdoings and moral downfalls of breaking the three vows, which are reprehensible by prescription. That is all the evils which which obstruct my higher rebirth. And then, when you do confession, you can also do a visualization of Tonglen practice, giving out your positive energies and merit and so forth to the suffering beings and taking on their negativities and suffering into you, and then do confession. And therefore, due to the power of true kindness of the truth of the kindness and truth of kindness of the victorious ones and their spiritual children, I may be able to sever any remaining vices and moral downfall from this moment on. For onwards. By the force of this practice of confession, may all the vices and defilements, as well as their remnants and prints of all my mother's ancient beings, be cleansed without a trace. It would be good to have all four countermeasures complete for such a practice of atonement. Sometimes remind yourself of the detailed karmic processes, which will be explained in the section of karmic fruition, of how each of the negative actions and moral downfalls bear their fruits in the form of ripened effects, the effects similar to the act committed, the effects similar to the experience at the causal level, and the effects manifesting in the environment, all of which we undergo either in the lower or upper forms of life in the realms of existence. Then think, what certainty do I have that I will not die within the next month or the next year and experience such suffering whilst being unable to bear them? At such a time, I would not find the means for to free myself from such terrible experiences. Even if I search for them, therefore, I should consider that I would do something to definitely purify the vices and moral downfalls. Now, when I know how to apply the antidotes, the four opponent powers, and practice confession as explained above. The recitation of the lines from the Samantabhadra aspiration are same for the rest of the limbs. And if you say the confession of downfalls and other prayers and rituals, if your prayer recitation is too long during the actual meditation session, you might not have time to reflect on the latter practices and visualizations. Thus, you should probably do the practice of applying the antidote recommended in the compendium of practices during the breaks between the meditation sessions and rejoice. Think that it is very good that some beginner practitioners, despite being tightly bound by the ropes of three poisons, are still be able to feel disenchanted with pleasures of this life and pursue a good rebirth, and therefore practice taking refuge and judging what karmas do to adopt and discard correctly and so forth, and that they are fortunate to begin to engage in the means for high status or birth properly, that the hearers and solitary realizers being spurred on by the thoughts of definite emergence from the bondage of samsara, work on the path to liberation, totally overcome the bondage of afflictive emotions with which we are accustomed since time immemorial, and since they do not have to go through rebirth in the future, they have forever overcome all kinds of suffering, such as sickness, aging, and death, which ensue from involuntary birth. All the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, including the transcendent triumphant ones, Maitreya, Manjushri, Nagarjuna, Asanga, down through to our indirect and direct masters, were compelled by their impartial compassion, with which they solely thought of helping the old sentient beings to carry out a very difficult task of forsaking their own heads, legs, hands, and so forth, practices which are beyond thought and words, and which do not occur even in dream to ordinary beings, even for selfish reasons. As soon as they attained the highest ambrosial enlightenment, they brought sentient beings to maturation and liberation. This indeed is amazing. Thus ponder, leave alone all those who are actually engaging the difficult austere practices like these. I am fortunate to hear and then be able to rejoice even in the fraction of such liberative account. Even now, many renunciates, monastics, study and think over the great scriptures, while some others practice in recluse to integrate their knowledge into their mainstream. Recollect those and think, though we are at such a degenerate time today, these people are creating very special imprints of study, reflection, and meditation. They surely will experience. So usually I say, half jokingly, half truth, we do these seven-limb practice, and we do request the Buddhas to turn the wheel of Dharma. If we do it sincerely, we first need to study the Ganjur and the Tenjur. Otherwise, we make prayer. We pray to the Buddha, please turn the wheel of Dharma. The Buddha will, if Buddha were to come here, he would say to us that I have already turned the wheel of Dharma. You have in your translation, Tibetan translation, over 100 volumes of scripture, and in Tenjur over 200 volumes. These are the ones you should study, and you are not studying this. And so, while we make prayer, while we pray for teaching, we do not pay attention to studying the text. These are the texts we must actually study. It's very important. The more we read, these texts are not meant for arranging on the altar alone, displaying on the altar. So around 5 in the morning today, I saw one small room, and I asked what is there, and they said there are Kanjur and Tenjur, these literature, over 300 volume. And I asked, who is reading them? Are they read by spirits or what? So again, Nyima Gyaltsen used to tell me that his teacher, again Tongbun Rinpoche, used to send them, the students, to him to borrow Kanjur and Tenjur texts. So again, Tongbun Rinpoche used to read Kanjur and Tenjur very much. And so these are our own. We have to look up to them. So your textbooks are meant for actually understanding the text written by Jerry Rinpoche, and these in turn, the Jerry Rinpoche's texts are meant for understanding the Indian classic texts, and they in turn lead us to understand the Kanjur. And there are lots of commentaries to the Kanjur and Tenjur. So the Kanjur and Tenjur must be regarded as our textbooks, and we should study them. They surely will experience extraordinary excellent results similar to in function to those actions. Recall even the little practices done by the householders, for example, doing prostrations, making offering, uttering recitation and prayer, and reflect that the Buddha Sutra discourses meant that even a slight root virtue aimed at the Buddhas will never be exhausted. And thus, as these people are not feeble in good karma, it is worth rejoicing in these good deeds. This is because as we who claim to be Mahayanists have pledged to lead all sentient beings to every kind of happiness, it goes without saying that we should feel especially glad in our hearts that the sentient beings themselves are doing virtuous practices without endeavor on our part. As for myself, thanks to my gurus, I'm certainly fortunate to be able to first enter at the right gateway by becoming a monastic in the teaching of the conqueror, find a small door of critical analysis into the philosophical texts, and leave an imprint of the entire path without letting my mind turn extroverted, which is the purpose of my study. Still, strive to aspire to be able to focus all your efforts into this kind of wholesome practice at the end of your life, and rejoice without arrogance that this may be so for you. If you feel glad just once for good deeds of someone who is on equal level, equal to you in their mental development, it is said that you will gain equal merit to that person. Therefore, it would be good to consider the beneficial qualities of how, with a little effort, you can accrue huge virtues, and how you can increase your virtues by rejoicing in their own virtuous practices, requesting to turn the wheel of Dharma. And if there is a risk of appearing somewhat glamorous in the eyes of others, then actually arrange 9 heaps of ingredients on a mandala structure in the center and in the cardinal and intermediate directions, symbolizing an 8-spoke Dharma wheel. Mentally visualize yourself miraculously manifesting as Mahabrahma, holding a 1,000-spoke golden wheel and entreating, O you, our source of refuge, because you intend to benefit sentient beings all the time, you display varieties of deeds in whatever way they are suitable to discipline beings. But the supreme means by which you serve others is solely giving teaching. Therefore, in order to bring all kinds of happiness and benefits to these migrators, please turn the wheel of profound and vast Dharma in whatever way they suit the individual disciples. Having supplicated this way, imagine your request has been accepted, and a rain of profound and vast Dharma is immediately showered in the myriad of worlds across the universe in accordance with the mental and predispositions of disciples, thereby performing the deeds of attracting those not gathered, maturing those attracted, liberating those ripened, and making those liberated reach the culmination of their path of enlightenment, requesting not to pass away. Upon the mandala base structure, make 5 heaps in the center and of the 4 continents. Four directions. And imagine them as a multicolored cross vajra adorning a lion throne. Along with that, imagine yours and others' body, wealth, resources, and a mass of virtues accrued through the three times, throughout the three times, and offer them up and plead for them to live long and plead like this. All the deeds you enacted from the initial cultivation of bodhicitta to culmination of Buddhahood are all meant solely for the benefit of sentient beings. Therefore, please remain steadfast in all the various physical forms you have displayed in accordance with what suits the sentient beings in whichever ways until all the short-term and long-term desired goals of sentient beings are fulfilled. Please live forever without withdrawing your physical manifestation for eons equal to the number of particles equal to the myriad of fields of world systems. Having prayed thus, from the depths of your heart, visualize that these fields of positive energy, visualize gurus and deities, have gladly accepted your request. If you like, you may also recall the benefits of entreating to give teaching and beseeching not to pass away. Dedication. Whatever roots of virtue I and others have gained and would gain throughout the three times, including the above six limbs, may they all not be wasted by wrong anger, by wrong views, anger, and so forth. May they not become cause for inferior effects like mundane gains, esteem, and fame, which are adverse to enlightenment, but I offer them as eight fields of merit to fulfill what they have been aiming for many eons, that is, to lead all sentient beings to Buddhahood. Due to this, may all sentient beings across the vast expanse of space achieve the short-term and ultimate joy and happiness, which knows no end. For that purpose, may I be able to attain the highest enlightenment because of a dedicating for complete enlightenment. Feel convinced that all the sources of refuge bless your virtues and never wasted and become cause solely for the highest enlightenment. If you like, reflect how the practice of dedication make your roots of virtue increase and become endless by extending the logic of mustard seeds analogy. Sixth, offering of mandala to pray to fulfill one's objective. With regard to details about the material size, the shape and mandala structure of the mandala structure, how cow products cow dung and fragrant substances are applied to it, the ingredients for heap, the number of heaps and how they are created, etc. You should train your ears to the correct words of mouth instructions that are passed down in the tradition and study the authentic documented text and guidance. The 23 heap mandala offering has authentic source in Tantra and has been practiced by many scholar adepts. But I will go through the well-known practice of mandala offering with 37 heaps, which goes like this. So first, hold the mandala structure, the base with the grains in your two hands. Whilst wiping the mandala base with your right wrist area, imagine that ground of ram, the pure ram you wish to offer, is cleared of all defects like mud, swamp, rocks, burnt stumps, bushes, and so on, so that it becomes even like the palms of the hands and in the nature of precious gem. But for beginners like us, though we cannot conceive a universe with its four continents in place of mandala structure, it is very important for us to clearly visualize the respective forms of mountains, the continents, and so forth when you place the related heaps. Therefore, while saying Om Vajrabhumi, etc., as the words indicate, you should visualize the golden base of the mandala, the iron fence surrounding the mountains and continents in the center of the majestic mountain, the nature of which is the four precious gems, and which is 116,000 leagues high, of which 80,000 leagues are submerged in water. On top of Mount Meru are the entire heavenly realms of 33 and the beautiful to behold city in the center of which is Chakra's palace of total victory, over which are heavily laden earth, piercing banyan trees, and divine courtyard of good dharma and others. With their numerous special resources on the four tapered stages of Mount Meru, there are many heavenly abodes of four kinds of great kings. Yuk Wood Bearer, the innermost golden wrench is half as tall as half Mount Meru. So we do, as per followers of Jay Rinpoche, we could recite the prayer called the Foundation of All Good Qualities. And so if you could insert, after seeking the blessings from the Guru, the three principles of the path. So it's very powerful. The three principal aspects of the path has a very powerful verse 4 generating this determination to be free. So after saying that with regards to the renunciation part in the foundation of all excellences, you should insert the part from this lamzo, the three principal aspects of the path. And then having some feeling of the thoughts to definitely emerge from samsara, then you can go on with the foundation and then with bodhicitta and emptiness also. So in the clear meaning commentary by Haribhadra, there is this mention which the wording is very similar to the suchness of the dependent origination. The wording is very similar to Prasanapada commentary by Chandrakirti. And so you can use those kind of phrases as well to understand emptiness. So, when you put the last heap, visualize the body, wealth, and the collection of the virtues of oneself and other sentient beings, which you have created over the three times, in the form of clouds of some of the Bhadra offerings, filling up the entire earth and space. Offer these up to the sources of refuge to request them to fulfill for the fulfillment of three great purposes, quickly and easily. Imagine they have gladly accepted your offering and then display their emanations to they display their emanations to tame the sentient beings according to what suits them. And so here there's a mention of one's own lama surrounded by the other lamas. So here the word that is mentioned is one, those lamas of one's own side. I mean, should not be taken as sectarian meaning, but we should maintain, I mean, this visualization of one's own lama and the lineage lamas from all the different traditions. Otherwise, we have been we have been fighting over sectarianism in Tibet. In the past, there have been such things. These are really disgusting that Gelugpas have, beaten up Kagyubas and Kagyubas also, vice versa. So as followers of the same teacher, the Buddha, we have to be harmonious. And as monastics, we have to live in harmony. And I know people from many different religious traditions. I'm not trying to convert or propagate Buddha Dharma to others, but I'm telling the practitioners of other religions to actually sincerely and honestly practice their own traditions well. But we all, as spiritual practitioners, we need to be harmonious, because if we have this common practice of love, compassion, and so forth, and if we are in harmony, it would be also good for others. Otherwise, it's no use to say, I am Kayapa, Gelugpa, Kajupa, Nyingmapa, and so forth. It only shows our narrow-mindedness, very closed-mindedness. And then there are we talk about Segyu lineage and Wensen Nyenyu spread lineage and so forth. And I saw one commentary of Lama Chöpa by Kunjin Lama Jamyang Chöpa. Of course, he was upholding the Segyu lineage mainly. So he seems to be not very familiar with Lama Chöpa. He was a student of Gunjo Yambel. So his commentary is really profound, but it doesn't seem to be following some kind of the living kind of a tradition, practical. So when I read his commentary, I thought that, oh, he was actually focusing mainly, emphasizing on Segyu, and not he is not familiar with Lama Chöpa. And so slowly it became came to the point that these two lineages were merged, the Wensen Yingyu and the Segyu. And then within the Kegyu, they talk about the four major and eight minor sub-schools. That doesn't make sense. If it's only the difference of these sub-schools and the different traditions are differentiation is made on the basis of the hat, then we could have different hats. And so the Westerners also refer to our traditions as yellow hat sect, red hat sect, and so forth. They are not to be blamed for this. So when I first gave Kala Chakra initiation in America, the late Gishe Swepala arranged that, and I told at that time that I'm not going to wear the hat, because the master, our own teacher, Buddha himself, didn't have any hat, and there is no mention of wearing hats in the Vinaya too. So there is a life story of Rejungpa, which is actually enacted in some play. And so his they're saying that his hat could be measured. If you want to have a cubit length, you could have that. If you want to have a hand span length or of a hand span, you can have that. So Zamdon Rinpoche was telling His Holiness that in those past ages, those who guard the doors of like monastic institutions actually used to wear a hat in order to show that they are the ones who are there to guard Buddhism against the non-Buddhists. And so His Holiness said they are actually indicating to the West, to the non-Buddhists, come now, like. And so, in the center is your root guru, and to the right is Master Maitreya. To the left is the Manjushri, and then in the front is Dorje Chang, the Vajradhara. And so Rangchok, here the term Rangchok, to one's own side, could be taken as the masters in front of you. While saying the My excellent, precious root guru, please sit on my crown upon the lotus moon, lotus and moon, and taking care of me with great kindness, please bestow the feats of body, speech, and mind. And so while saying this last line for the first time, imagine your root guru who is in front of the mighty sage, Buddha Shakyamuni, and who looks the same as you behold him in personal life, gladly duplicating him, comes down, sits on your crown and the lotus and moon cushion upon lion throne. He faces the same direction as yourself with his two hands fold together. And to introduce you, he pleads on your behalf. So when you plead to the guru, I have no one else except you to rely on. The main thing to practice is bodhicitta and the emptiness, view of emptiness. And therefore, this is dependent on your guru, and therefore you make such supplication. And then say this verse twice. Your body created through millions, billions of excellent positive virtues. Your speech fulfills the hopes of all times, infinite transmigrators. Your mind, heart, understands every bit of knowledge precisely. I supplicate you, O line of Shakyas, O spiritual liberator. So the first time you recite the above lines, imagine a stream of nectar flowing from the bodies of the teachers in general and the body of the mighty sage and with clears and all the obstacles experience a profound vast path. When you recite this line second time, so we stop there and switch to Namdur Lakchang, the Phabongkhas Lamrim. We are on page, if you have the soft copy, the new version, the edition, new edition. It's on page 53, a paragraph, leaving the first two lines, first, second, third paragraph, we are there, where it begins with this word. This teaching of Tsongkhapa's includes all and every teaching of Atisha. It is also has the peerless instructions of exceptional profundity, through which one can achieve the unification of normal learning within one short lifetime, even in this degenerate age. So Jerem Bush's Lamrim teaching writings contain many particular profound things not found in even the Lamrims of the Kadambas and the past. So this is very clear if you read these texts, particularly the Lhagdong Chemo, the insight section of Lamrim Chemo. Jokyabun Rinpoche says that Lhagdong, the great insight and the intermediate, and then the commentaries to Madhyamaka Avatara and commentary to Mulya Madhyamaka Karika and Lekshe Nyingpo. If you understand these, if you can actually understand these texts, then you'll be able to really gain a good understanding, a holistic, comprehensive understanding of emptiness and the Madhyamaka view. One will come to know this after reading them in detail. Now, there are many traditional lineages that come from Jerem Boshi Kinzen and Lamrim. The most famous of these principal lineages are the eight oral traditions associated with the eight great teachings. We did this yesterday. Both essence of refined gold and Manjushri's own sacred words are said to be composed strictly according to the sutras. The easy path and swift path are said to be related to the tantras. Here is a little on how the southern lineage of Manjushri's sacred words was passed on. This is the shorter of the two types of reading teachings on this text. The fifth Dalai Lama integrated a shorter teaching by marking certain passages in the text. He also gave a set of instructions on the refuge visualization, the merit-filled visualization concerning the bathhouse, etc., different from those of the lineages of the central province. The Dalai Lama has gave the southern lineage to the Lama Purpu Chokngawang Chambar Rinpoche of Epa, who in turn gave it to Lobsang Khyutun, the monastic official responsible for running the Dalai Lama's quarters. Lobsang Chiu-Tsun's biography has one extraordinary detail. He was especially intelligent and devised many variations on the teaching, some in more detail and some in less. In order to dispel confusion, he knew he would have to ask the Lord of Dharma, the fifth Dalai Lama himself. He had an audience and received the whole teaching in an hour or two. The Dalai Lama made him abbot of Badala. Lobsang Chiu-Tsun spent the last part of his life practicing in a solitary place called the Lamrim Chöding. Now, where he reached a high degree of attainment, Lobsang Chiu-Tsun gave the teaching to Phubuchok Phuntsok Gyatso, that great adept from Yerba, who completed the whole experiential teaching in 3 months. Phuntsok Gyatso developed an extraordinary realization into mental quiescence, special insight, and nurtured many disciples of in Yerba. Through the experiential teaching, he developed his powers by means of practice of Heruka and Bodhi Mandala, and most of the lamas of the southern lineage are said to have followed this pattern. Phuntsok Gyatso gave the lineage of Lama to Lama Khajur Dendar or Weber, and who in turn gave it to Abbot Gedun Jamyang. Gedun Jamyang wrote a separate work on the southern lineage because he feared that some errors had been perpetuated as to which passages of Manjushri's own words had actually been marked by the fifth Dalai Lama for the southern lineage's benefit. Gedun Jamyang's book circulated only in handwritten copies until Chabjit Ruwang Gelig Gyatso had it made into wood blocks. And Gedun Jamyang passed the lineage on to Jege Ngawang Tudop. He in turn gave it to Denpa Gyatso, abbot of Dagbo College. While Denpa Gyatso was completing his studies, he was rostered for various menial chores and is said to have attained the view of middle way when chopping wood. And he in turn gave the Lamrim teachings to Seto Lama Kelden. And then we go on to the next page. I had a look at your meditation, saw everything he told Kyesang Tenzin when he visited Lhasa one day. He even told Kyesang of such details as juniper trees of the right and left house. There is a big white thing that kept on moving on one of the balconies of the house. What is it? He said. It was a curtain that being moved by the wind. Lhasa Jinpa had seen it in his meditative absorption. Lobsang Chiu-Tsun gave the lineage to his brother, Kyesang Tenzin. Kyesang later became a great adept through the both Sutra and Tantra. When he gave teachings, white rays of light would issue from his body, both eyes, and encircle the audience of disciples. At the end of the teaching, the rays would dissolve back into his eyes. Now, people saw this many times. Many people were amazed to see him giving teachings while at the same time walking on the circumambulation path and this and so on. He had visions of a whole merit field of Guru Puja practice. When he died, the top of his skull had a miraculous drawing of Guru Puja, a merit field on it. It is still at Lading Hermitage. So Lobsang Chiu-Tsun himself had achieved extraordinary single pointed. This is the previous page, and so Lobsang Chiu-Tsun gave the lineage to his brother, and so in the text it says that he, although he could see from his meditation cave through his clairvoyance, all the rest of the things at that other place, he was not able to make out what that curtain actually was. And so Lobsang Chiu-Tsun gave the lineage to his brother Kyesang Tenzin and so forth. and rays of light would issue from his two eyes, encircling the audience. And towards the end of the teaching, when the teaching was about to finish, the rays would dissolve back into his eyes. People saw this many times. And he had visions of the whole merit field. When he died, the top of his skull had a miraculous drawing of the Guru Puja field, merit field. It is still at Lhading. He gave the teaching to the powerful adept Gyasang Kedup. Who also achieved his clairvoyant powers through the Chakra Sambhara practices. My own precious guru, my refuge and protector, heard the teaching from him. That was a brief discussion on how the Southern lineage Manjushri's onwards passed down. You ought to know this in more detail, referred to the standard biographies. Now, for the central province lineage of Manjushri's onwards, the all-seeing fifth Guru Lama gave it to Jinpai Gyatso, an occupant of the Garden Throne. And eventually, the lineage came down to Losang Lhendrup, another successor of Garden Throne. Jelosang Jinpa received it from him. The concise discourses of Swift Path have the following history. The all-seeing Panchen Losang Yishi dictated the text, but no one ever asked him for the lineage discourse. The Panchen Lama became partially blind in his old age, and when someone wanted an oral transmission of few important pages of text, they had to have the pages rewritten in very large letters. The great adept Losang Namgyel was inviting Jadal Hermitage at... visiting Jadal Hermitage at the time, he read the Swift Path and thought that prosperity would be all the poorer if he did not obtain the lineage of its discourse. He bundled up his possessions and went to Dashin Lumbu. He told the Panchen Lama's steward he wanted the transmission of the Panchen Lama's collected works, and he was especially keen, however, to get discourse. Now, Losang Namgyel was only an extraordinary monk, yet he was asking for so much, and Panchen Lama's eyesight was weak. The steward was taken aback and scolded Losang Namgyel roundly. Losang returned home, but could not endure the situation. He made the request three times more, but the steward did absolutely nothing about it. In desperation, Losang Namgyel returned and insisted that the caretaker not be so self-cherishing, saying, "Listen, I'm not asking you to give me the teaching. Take my request to the Panchen Lama." The steward lost his temper and told the Panchen Lama while still in a rage. The Panchen Lama, however, was only too happy to give Losang Namgyel transmissions, and throughout the whole teaching, he had no problem at all with his eyesight and so on. My own precious guru told me this story many times. Nevertheless, Losang Namgyel is officially listed in one of our lineage gurus. It's not officially listed. It is supposed to have come down through Puchok Champa, Ngawang Champa, as is made clear in the preparatory rite recitation of the entitled An Ornament for the Throne of the Fortunate. So now I have given in brief a rough outline of the greatness of the author, although I have not mentioned all the lamas of this and disturbance. And I have... if I were to do so in detail, I would follow the two volumes of biographies and the lineage gurus written by Ishi Gyatso, attributed to His Holiness Dalai Lama, at least, that is what my precious guru said. I have not the time to do this now, but if you ever obtain a copy of the book, read it all the time at the end of each life story, make prayers such as, "O Guru, May my body be exalted like yours. May my retinue, life, and surroundings become as same as yours. May even my very name be your supreme name." We would also meditate on the limbs of rejoicing. Day 3. As Lord Shantideva said, "I have obtained the optimum human birth so hard to achieve, which can achieve a person's aims. If I derive no benefit from it now, how could such an endowment happen again?" In other words, the greatness of the Dharma given to increase one's respect for the Dharma. The Lamrim has four greatnesses. On page 60, The teaching here refers to the scriptures of Victorious Ones, as Bhavya's commentary, the lamp of wisdom says. Teachings means the following: the scriptures of the Bhagavan that teach without distortion the things gods and humans wishing to gain the nectar-like state should know, the things they should abandon, the things they should make manifest, and things they should meditate upon. Realizing that all the teachings are without contradiction means that one person should understand them as practice in order to be enlightened. To be without contradiction means to be harmonious. The Mahayana, Hinayana, Vinaya, and Tantras, etc., seem to contradict each other from a literal point of view, but they are all nothing but the main practice to take us to enlightenment or a branch of its attainment. I'm switching.
We're on the page number 61. The edition that we have is the New Revised Edition 2006 Wisdom Publication, continuing from page number 61. You may similarly feel the Hinayana, Mahayana, the Sutras, Tantras, etc. are tailored for particular disciples. So all of these teachings are not mandatory in the one person's practice in order to become enlightened. So that in order to lead different disciples, they're all the different paths are being taught by Buddha. It was many years before when Kulu Lama Rinpoche was there, and it was one day in Dharamsala. Some monks came from Kuno region. He was old, really very devoted, and he asked me to give teaching on generation of mind according to the Kagyu lineage. So he's a practitioner of the Mahamudra, and there is also the leading of the mind according to the great completion stage. So at that time I'm not aware of such teachings, and I told him I have no idea of this teaching. So Kuno Lama Rinpoche is staying in Varanasi and Dojiten, so you must seek Kuno Lama Rinpoche and take this lineage and instruction from Kuno Lama Rinpoche. So I feel very sad at that time. He's a senior, a poor, and came solely to seek that instruction from me, and I have nothing to offer him. I'm not able to fulfill his wish. And as in order to benefit all the sentient beings through the practice of the path, so I felt that there is something that I missed and not able to perform. So later, through the Dragon Chenzo Rinpoche and Tiju Rinpoche, and also Chogyu Rinpoche and other great lineage masters, I took the lineage and instructions from them. So this is one of the cue why I have to take these instructions and the lineage from other masters. When I met someone, such a poor person, of course I have no discrimination with the sects, whether it's my side or the other side. But then I felt that I'm not able to fulfill even the wish of one single person, which I feel very sad. So it's very important to take the teaching from all the different sects. And it is really very helpful to investigate and analyze the contents of different traditions. And from the Guhya Samajas, when we read the contents of the Guhya Samaja treatise, of course, it really great help from the great perfection traditions. Of course, it is same for the other side also, according to the great perfection lineage. So when we study them, of course, the Guhya Samaja part also really assist us in understanding the reality. So if it is being analyzed and examined by a real experienced practitioner, then of course all the teachings will fall at one point. Panchen Pandey also seems to be a bit discriminating at that time when he gave the great perfection teaching in Kumbum, and when he explained this sentence, then he says, if the Panchen Rinpoche is there, then he wants to ask whether how can the view of the Madhyamika school is not the non-affirming or the affirming negative. So that is something different. It is also in the later part of the Chanjo Rinpoche's biography. And within the tantric practiced and also while meditating about the great perfection, sometimes the emptiness is being meditated as an affirming negative. So this is really very evident, and also in many other texts of the great scholars also exists in great scholars' texts were really experienced. And he says that when we analyzed and established the view, of course, the non-affirming is the main thing. But while meditating about the view of the emptiness, so it is important to view the emptiness as affirming negative. So even though the emptiness by itself is a non-affirming negative, but due to one's way of practicing and meditating about it, there may be instances where we need to see it as a non-affirming. Therefore, it is very important to see the vast amount of different scriptures in the text. Having realized and review all these great texts, then of course we will be able to determine the fact with a valid cognition. The main question of a bodhisattva is to walk for the sake of sentient beings. Thus, bodhisattvas must teach the three paths that will lead the three types of disciples to their particular form of liberation. But unless bodhisattvas know these paths themselves, they cannot teach them to others. The means to these ends are obscure. It is difficult to explain them. The way leading to an understanding of the paths belonging to the three vehicles is something bodhisattvas should develop in their mind streams in order to be sure of the different routes to achieve benefit for others. Page number 62. In ornamental realization, we find those who walk for the sake of beings benefit the world by knowing the paths. Another point, the goal is Buddhahood, and this is a state possessing all good qualities, all faults having been eliminated. In order to achieve this state, the Mayanapad must be one that eliminates all of a person's fault and must bring every kind of good quality into effect. Since there is not a single scripture that does not eliminate some type of fault or cause some type of good quality to be developed, surely all the scriptures are to be included among the divisions of the Mayana. As already explained, the three baskets, the four classes of tantra, and so forth, and the scriptures and their commentaries constitute a harmonious practice to take one person to his or her enlightenment. So there is utterly no contradiction between them whatsoever. This is how all transmitted teachings are to be understood as being without contradiction. When page number 63... the greatness of allowing all scriptures to present themselves to you as instructions. If you have not met with anything like the stages of the path to enlightenment, all the scriptures will not present themselves to you as instructions. But the supreme instructions are the victorious one's scriptures and the great classics that comment on these scriptures. There has never in this world been a better teacher than Shakyamuni Buddha, the Bhagavan, the transcendent, the fully accomplished, the struggle all of all defilements. Page number 64. Tsongkhapa had this to say: they have studied much, yet are poor in Dharma. Blame it not they taking the scriptural instructions. That is, it is damaging not to take the scriptures that are being instructions. For example, there was a geshe at our monastery who visited his homeland in Kham. He asked the Nyingma Lama for practical instruction and then meditated on the Lama's small instruction. Because of this, the local people decided that Gelug Dharma is definitely only for debate, never something to be practiced. So everyone ignored the Gelug teachings. This stuff pulls the leg out from under the teachings. Personally, I find this more depressing. You must put into practice anything whose meaning you have determined through study or contemplation, and the meaning of which whatever you practice should have been ascertained through study and contemplation. If you ascertain one thing through study and contemplation and then practice something else, it is like pointing out a racetrack to someone and then using another piece of land for your horse race. The great stages of the path uses these very words. Perhaps they require some explanation. You are about to hold a horse race and point out a particular valley saying, this is going to be the racetrack tomorrow. Yet on the actual day of the race, you hold it somewhere else. Page number 65. When that great adept Lobsang Namgyal was giving the oral transmission of the 8,000 verse perfection of Visham Sutra, he remarked from time to time, oh, if only I were not so old, this is something I should meditate on. When you understand the Lamrim, all your debating practice in the monastery Kordiot would also come under the Lamrim. You would take this debate as a meditation instruction. Suppose you are debating the development of bodhicitta, you will instantly draw comparisons with a section of great school that deals with training the mind for bodhicitta. Or you would compare a debate on the 12 interdependent links with medium scope. Or in a debate on the dhyana concentration states of the form, realm and the levels of the formless realm, you will readily compare these with the mental quintessence section of the Lamrim. Even when you go to recite some Dharma ritual, you would be able to integrate it into the Lamrim, no matter from which scripture the recitation was taken. You would even readily see how many discarded scraps of paper in a wayside shrine you chance on becomes a topic of meditation within your practice. Once when I was very young, I saw a discarded page in a wayside shrine on the path around the monastery. The page was one of the songs by the 7th Dalai Lama, Kesan Gyatso. The young bee in the rhododendron flies from brightly colored flower to flower. See how quickly he moves from one to the next. Now my song explains this image. Many people in these degenerate times have impure minds and value in triva. Look, friends, one moment, enemies the next. I've not found a constant friend. Page number 66. Third paragraph. As one yogi, Janchub Rinchen, said, we are not told we will find instruction for gaining certain enlightenment in some palm-sized ontology of spells. We should look upon all scriptures as instruction. We must think this way. These words strike at the very root, so taking all the scriptures as instructions has much point to it. You might wonder, is it really enough to study just the Lamrim? The meaning of the scriptures and their commentaries is contained within the Lamrim, right from the section on relying on a spiritual guide to the mental quintessence section. A particular Lamrim may have an elaborate set of headings, and another set may be brief. Some of these headings require analytic meditation, while others demand fixation meditation. When you have mastered the framework of these headings, you will know which type of meditation to apply to this heading. By page number 67, Rinpoche then spoke in detail on how a Lamrim text, that is the full Lamrim framework, can lead one through the path, no matter how brief the text. He compared this with two rooms, one of a government official and other of a simple monk, both contained enough furniture to serve their purposes. The greatness of allowing you to easily discover the true thinking of the victorious one. The words of the victorious one and their commentaries are, as I have already said, the best of instructions. Yet you cannot discover the ultimate thoughts of the victorious one merely by referring to these great classics without any instruction from your guru on the stages of the path to enlightenment, despite the fact that the victorious one's ultimate thoughts are in these classics. To discover these thoughts, you would have to grapple with this text for a long time. By debating on the Lamrim, you easily discover them without such a struggle. Perhaps you are wondering, what are these thoughts of the victorious one? My own precious guru, my refuge and protector, told me that in general, they are taken to be the three scopes, but even more importantly, they must be taken as the three fundamentals of the path. This is surely correct. The great Tsongkhapa clarified the victorious one's ultimate thoughts on the correct view. In the three fundamentals of the path, Tsongkhapa said, appearance mutually interdependent and emptiness being without assertions. So as long as you think these two seem separate from each other, you have not yet realized the thought of the sage. Page number 68, Third Parra. Here the great stages of the path and other texts explicitly instruct that you not do anything that will give you the karma and the resulting obscurations that goes with abandoning the Dharma. But if you have not taken the first three of these four greatnesses to heart, you will make pretty distinctions that cause you to respect one part of the Dharma more than others, distinctions such as Mayana versus Hinayana, or theoretical Dharma versus practical Dharma, an abundant part of the Dharma, producing a continual stream of various type of karma. The obscurations that result are extremely heavy. Page number 69. If you are convinced about the first three of these greatnesses, you will not ignore any of the victor's teachings. You will pay the same respect to all of them as things to be put into practice. You will save yourself from holding some of the Dhamma to be good and some bad, the biggest contributing factor to abandoning the Dharma. Also, if you think over the ways to devote yourself properly to your spiritual guide, you will rid yourself of any karmic obscurations you may have in relation to him or her. And when you become convinced about, for example, the truth of the optimum human rebirth or impermanence, you will automatically cease doing misdeeds related to clinging to this life. You will stop your misdeeds associated with self-cherishing when you pursue the meditation topic on the development of bodhicitta. You then train in the meditation topic of the selflessness until the topic of self-grasping. They are produced sequentially in your mind stream, one after another. You automatically stop all your most wayward behaviors as a result of realizing the Lamrim meditation topic, that is, each behavior's opposite. Page number 70, second para. These four greatnesses are conventionally taken in two ways, the four greatnesses of the presentation, that is the actual words used, and the four greatnesses of the subject matter, that is the meaning of these words. The treatises themselves have the four associated with presentation. However, it is said to be more important that the person comes to have the four associated with the subject matter. This concludes the four greatnesses. The Lamrim has, in addition to these four, three further features. The Lamrim is complete because it contains all the subject matter of Sutra and Tantra. It is easy to put into practice because it emphasizes the steps in taming the mind. It is superior to other traditions because it is enhanced with instruction from two gurus who were schooled in the tradition of two great champions. While it is impossible for the learning to include all the actual works of the scriptures and commentaries, it does contain and teach the key meanings completely, teaching this in a condensed form. So in the Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment, Adisha also have taught contents about the Vajrayana teaching also. And the Lamrim teachings are very easy to practice because they are mainly focused about how to tame and subdue our mind, starting with the first, the beneficial, presenting the beneficial qualities of awakening mind for the enlightenment. So even though there are many other texts explaining and presenting very detailed about these beneficial qualities, but the Lamrim teachings, the Lamrim text is the one which has all these placed in sequential and a right order. Therefore, it is very easy to take into hand and put into practice. Continuing from the last prayer on page number 70, this instruction from Divamkara Sri Jana, the stages of path to enlightenment, seems to incorporate and teach within the stages of the path all the instructions of the scriptures and their commentaries. If taught and practiced by those who know how to teach and practice it, it seems to arrange in sequence not only the large and small instructions, but also encapsulates the whole of the scripture. Thus, I do not teach a long list of different type of discourse. Page number 71, the teachings of the other schools may have the convention of various list of teachings. The four great teachings on the preliminary practices, such as taking refuge and the like, teachings on the main practices, etc. Even so, the original Kadambas and we new Kadambas traditionally dispense with these many long lists, for everything is already in the Lamrim. The Lamp on the Path teaches the synthesis of the entire subject matter of the scriptures within the space of three folios. All the other Lamrim texts similarly compress all this material because they take the Lamp on the Path as their root text. That's the great Tsongkhapa said. It contains the essence of all scripture. By teaching and studying this system for a session, one gains the benefit of discussing and studying all holy dharma, contemplate its meaning, for that is certain to be powerful. Last prayer of page number 71. So that is why Geshe Tuilongpa said on the subject of teaching the Lamrim, I have virtue, the great yak of the Dharma. Page number 72. People who think at a lower level may not understand the whole elaborate Lamrim text. They can still depend on a shorter text. For example, one of the concise teachings, that is the full Lamrim framework. This concise teaching is still able to lead them along the path, but if the text leaves out even one of the topics of meditation, it cannot lead anybody along the path. Take the medicine for fever, cold, camphor 25. You do not need to go out and obtain a bulky package of each of its 25 ingredients and then take them individually, as long as the medicine has been compounded properly with all the 25. It will bring down the fever. But if one of the ingredients is missing, the remaining medicine will not rid you of the fever, no matter how much of it you take. Now that you have been fortunate enough to meet with this king of all instruction, you ought to focus on it. We have undergone the many varied sufferings of samsara, and we have gained the highest bliss samsara has to offer. Our own minds were responsible for all these things. Nothing is said to be better than the Lamrim for taming the mind. The Lamrim places great emphasis on the means for achieving this. The Lamrim is therefore easy to put into practice. The guru skilled in Nagarjuna school was Vithya Kokili, and in Asanga school, Suvarna Deva Guru. This teaching is enriched by the instruction and is therefore superior to all other traditions. As great Jitsongkhapa said, the stages of the path of enlightenment stem from Nagarjuna and Asanga, the crest jewels of the world's scholars, the pennant of whose fame is raised before all beings. Page number 73. not even ornamental realization as these three features. Even the king of Tantras, Sri Guhya Samaja, does not have them. These two texts do not contain all the subject matter of Sutra and Tantra, nor do they emphasize the taming of the mind. The second last para. In other words, this heading will determine whether the following teaching will challenge your mindstream into following the path or not. It will be difficult for you to translate my teaching into contemplation and meditation if you get this heading wrong, just as you would be wrong about all the dates until the 15th if you took the wrong date to be first of the lunar month. There are three headings at this point: the way to listen to the Dharma, the way to teach Dharma, what things the disciple and teacher should do together at the end. Here there are three subheadings: contemplating the benefit of studying the Dharma, how to show respect for the Dharma and teacher, the actual way to listen to the Dharma. On page number 75, it is vital to contemplate first the benefits of studying the Dharma, because only then will you develop the strong desire to study it. If the contemplation is not done properly, you will be extremely happy to embark on such a study, and you therefore must contemplate such benefits. In the Chataka Tales, it is said, study is a lamp to dispel the darkness of brightness. It is the best of possessions. Thieves cannot rob you of it. It is a weapon to defeat your enemy, your blindness to all things. It is your best friend who instructs you in the means. It is a relative who will not desert you, though you be poor. It is a medicine against sorrow that does you no harm. It is the best army which defeats great legions of misdeeds. Page number 76. The amount of ignorance you manage to rid yourself of similarly depends on how much study you have done. The light of your wisdom has grown proportionally. In the sayings of the Buddha, we find, as in a well-curtained house, whose inside sung in darkness, though there be shapes therein to see, the sighted do not see thereby. So a man of good family may be discerning, but until he studies, he will not know sinful things from virtue. In other words, you cannot see anything in a completely dark place of study. You will know nothing of the points required for modifying your behavior. If you light a lamp in the darkened room, you will be able to see all the things inside it vividly with your existing eyes. Thus, by reliance on the lamp of study, you can come to understand all phenomena with the eye of wisdom. Bodhisattva Levels talks in some detail about these benefits and on how one should listen to teachings with five attitudes. The first attitude is to regard the teaching as an eye by means of which you developed more and more wisdom. Then you should regard the teachings as illumination through which your given wisdom eye sees things as they seem to be and as they really exist. You should regard it as something precious that occurs but rarely in the world. Regard the teaching as something most beneficial, for through it you will obtain the fruit enjoyed by great bodhisattvas. We're on page number 77. Lastly, henceforth, you should regard the teaching as something completely sanctioned, because it will enable you to achieve the bliss of mental quiescence and spiritual insight. Your studies are also the supreme possession that thieves and so forth cannot take from you. Thieves can carry off your worldly goods, enemies may confiscate them, and so on, but it is impossible to lose to thieves the seven jewels of the Aryas, that is your studies, etc., nor the three good qualities of scholarship, ethics, and kind-heartedness. When it comes to transportation, they are not like your worldly goods, which give you many hassles. For example, when you go back to your birthplace, deciding which of your possessions to take with you on the journey. Your studies are not like this. You can even take them with you when you die. So they say it is most important that we simple monks should not long for fancy tea churns decorated with brass hoops offer copper pots and so on. We should long for seven jewels of the Aryas. Study is like a weapon to overcome your enemy, your blindness. Through study, you will root out all your enemy delusions. Study is also your best friend who will give you unmistaken advice. When you are about to begin some action, your former studies will advise you whether it is right or not. If right, how to do it. If wrong, how to prevent it. Its benefits and drawbacks. My own precious guru told me, while King Kalamayishivu was alone in prison, he became more and more determined. This was because of the advice he received from his companion, his former studies. Page number 78. If you must seek out friends and relatives, better to seek study, contemplation, and meditation. By the way, in Kesang's Lamrim, the last line of Abhurva's reads, "Oh, my meal ticket, I pay homage to you." But the version I gave is exactly how my own precious guru used to tell this story, so I have given it to you unedited. Study is also a medicine for the sickness of delusion and an army to destroy the legion of non-virtue. It is also the best fame, glory, and the greatness of treasures. So Kesang's Lamrim is really very wonderful. It contained the explanations coming from the great texts, and also it contains the other qualities also. And Kesang has also a text commentary on the Mahamudra and also on the fundamental mind. He's really a great scholar. The Jataka tales also tells us, whoever has studied will develop faith. He will be steadfast and will delight in the excellent. He will develop wisdom and have not benighted ignorance. It is right even to sell one's flesh to obtain it. In other words, study has infinite good qualities. You will develop faith in the good qualities of the three jewels through your study. You will then work hard at making offerings to the Buddhas and so forth. Also, because of your belief in the certainty of karma, you will be happy to modify your behavior and so on. You will come to understand the faults of the first two of the three truths, four truths, and the good qualities of the last two. Thus, you will be steadfast in working toward your final goal. Page number 79. Young people ought to study the five standard debate subjects when they enter one of the big monasteries. There is a huge difference between those who have studied and those who have not, even in the things they recognize to be three jewels. Even if a teacher is little read, his disciples shouldn't follow after him. If he makes him study in this life, in his next life, he too will develop as much wisdom as they will in. The old, the elevated, and so on may want to study the great classics, but that will come and interrupt their studies before they rid themselves of their misconceptions. Such people are therefore incapable of completing a great amount of study. But if they study and contemplate something like the Lamrim, they gain some understanding of the whole path. Tsongkhapa once told the Benchen Lama, Losan Chukyi Gyentsen, in a dream, "In order to benefit yourself and others, never be satisfied with your studies. Observe bodhisattvas on the third level. They are dissatisfied with their amount of study. You should do as he says. No matter on how low a level people think you could, how could they not know how to study or have enough time to devote to studying? A concise discourse on Lamrim, for example, how to declaim, we are not bookish types and live with the having wasted their share of the Dharma. Why, even horses, cows, and sheep carry their own share, each according to their capacity. You must then study at your own intellectual level. But whatever text you study, be it brief or elaborate, be sure it is one containing the wide range of meditation topics, starting with depending on your spiritual guide and ending in the unification of normal learners. We will pause here on the page number 79. So page number 80 will be continuing in the afternoon.